everyone. Welcome to the Polarized Podcast, baby. I am your host, Forever Guest, and Vampire Werewolf, I'll Never Tell. This is an episode of Polarized Podcasts. This is a podcast about polarizing movies, according to Rotten Tomatoes. The types of movies that audiences and critics disagree on the most. Sometimes audiences love it or the critics hate it or vice versa. It's always a battle between the two, much like the vampires and the werewolves. The audiences and the critics are toiling away in this age-old war that we don't know why it got started and how, and why is it a two-party system, folks? We just don't know. It's 31% by the critics. It's a 79% by the audience on that popcorn meter. That means it's polarizing. Very polarizing. And we're here to talk about Underworld, baby. Not the band, but the movie. And it's the first that came out in 2003. It is very 2003. And I was a 13-year-old boy in 2003. And let me tell you, this movie was made for a 13-year-old boy in 2003. And I can't say... To just get into my little history before I introduce my my host with the most. I don't think I saw it at that age, unfortunately, but I eventually came to it. The movie I did see first in the series was Rise of the Lycans. Was my first Underworld movie that I saw in movie theaters with my friend Jason. Shout out, Jason. And he's like, don't worry about it. It's a prequel. So it's like a whole story in itself, and you'll be fine. And I was. It told the whole, you know, told that story. But to see this movie and see those flashbacks was something, because I was like, wow, that whole thing plays out in Rise of the Lycans. But we're not here to talk about that completely today. We're just talking about the first iteration, and I cannot, for the life of me, don't make me do it alone. I don't want to. I need my best bud, Brandini.
Let's do it now. Let's do it now, baby. I'm here. I'm a co-host with the mostest. Let's go.
Yeah. All right. Underworld. I mean,
Underworld.
That's where it takes place.
James, this is
flat Earth, and then underneath is where the vampires and the werewolves live, right?
Yeah.
That's what the movie posits.
Yeah, that's what it posits, yeah. Like the werewolves live in sewers like rats, but they're dogs and they're similar.
I love that that's like the almost like a slur to the werewolves calling them dogs.
I know it is. Well, because they're human beings, right? Because they're technically lycans, because that's the difference between a werewolf and a lycan, is that a werewolf is just a wolf all the time in this lore, and a lycan is somebody who can transform back into a human.
Yeah, they say like over time they've gotten stronger and stronger. They can just transform whenever they want.
Absolutely.
I don't know what a disparaging word for a vampire would be. He blitz
a prick. A prick.
Yeah, that's not bad. this is our last scary movie of our spooky season here on Polarized.
It's the transition, right? It's like I was thinking about it. No one ever talks about this movie at what?
I guess it's not really super spooky, and it's also spoiler alert. Yeah. We might be doing more other movies like this in the future, so.
Yeah, so get ready and buckle up because we're starting a fucking series. Let's go. Let's just announce it.
Let's announce it now, Buttercup. It's an Underworld series. There's a polarizing series. It's a polarizing series. We're going through it, except the last
one. We're here. So I'm super excited about this because this was a formative movie for me. I mean, I really, this idea of this type of protagonist to me was just so attractive, and this combination of like Matrix and more Matrix, I guess, like that aesthetic was so I was hungry for it, you know, because once you see the Matrix, I don't know if I saw this in the theater. It's really hard to recall, but I saw it pretty closely after. Like, I don't think I didn't see this after the age of like 16. It had to have happened between this releasing and coming on DVD, which makes sense because we grew up in a time where, like, so a rated R movie as a, you know, 14-year-old, 13-year-old or whatever, you can't go to the theater because you're not allowed to, you know, unless a parent takes you, but like, it's not like your parents will make Underworld. Like, that's not, you can't convince your parent. I didn't have cool enough parents for that to be able to convince of being like, let's go see this vampire werewolf Matrix movie. They were not going to be about it. But where this lived in and to the like us and where we sit in human history is it was, you get it on DVD, you know, because that's something you could convince your parents because they're going to rebuy a toaster at Best Buy and you're like, hey, can I get a movie? You know, and even though this looked dark, it's not like gross forward. And it's yeah, I don't know. It's I think I knew about this to some degree from somebody else too. I feel like because I was I was really into
the dark arts.
The dark arts. Yeah. I was drawn to the dark arts. And so, yeah, this whole series, the prequel, like you had mentioned, I think I've tried to watch, but no, because this is a trilogy and it was set out to be that. This I have seen. And yeah, this has a little corner. This has a little place in my being, who I am.
Kind and so same I'm really excited too, for you, like, to you. Yeah, same, dude. For someone who hasn't, didn't see it at the time, I just remember all my friends talking about it. Or like at least a few of my friends just like, yeah, probably man. There's like the vampire goes like, yeah, and then the werewolf is like, yeah, and then like, pew, 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 and they got the silver nitrate bullets, and then these other bullets got UV daylight bullets, so that's why it works. Yeah. Have you seen Matrix? Totally. It's pretty much like Matrix. Which, that was one that I was pretty sheltered in terms of like not watching any R-rated movies. Matrix was the one that like they thought was cool enough and they had seen once before, like, we're going to sit down as a family and watch the Matrix. Sure. And I didn't understand anything that was going on, but those action scenes were just fucking mind blowing. And then I spent the next few years of my life, like, playing Matrix. Like, we go out on the trampoline and try to do Matrix stunt moves on the trampoline and stuff. And into the pool, off the roof, and questionable stuff. But it was fun.
It was good fun. Yeah, it's just part of our DNA, I guess, to reiterate, you know, going into this series, going into this franchise, that it's part of our DNA. And it's going to be interesting to be as critical as we want to be, right? We don't have to be super critical of this, because at the end of the day, it's action. It's like action movie shit, you know, like this. It doesn't need to be totally serious. And I think hopefully we've communicated that idea well enough of like, movies can just being a ride, being, you know, something that's for enjoyment and not a whole lot deeper than that at times is okay. You know, but it's also okay to be critical of those things as well. I just, hopefully we've created over time this space of like, I'm not going to get upset, say, James, if you were like, this is really stupid, you know? And that's, I guess, the energy we want to put out there through this series is that of like, I guess maybe I'm just speaking my agenda here of this, trying to reconcile like, me watching this series at where I sit now at this age and how I feel about it, and try to be open-minded and critical about it if I can be. So
I'm definitely going to be operating at both of those wavelengths, and within this movie alone, was plenty of both of like, this is fucking awesome, hell yeah, this is sick, like, it's vampires and werewolves fighting each other and like, and doing slow-mo Matrix moves, and like, logic goes out the window. Luckily there is a surprising amount of lore that goes with it, and a lot of backstory to all this shit. But I absolutely am going to be critical as well. Whereas like things are stupid for sure, but in a good way. Yes. Too. Like it's like, this is so dumb and awesome. Like it's vampires versus werewolves. Like that's what the movie is. So like, it's going to be kind of dumb. It should be.
You got to start getting on board with Colin Likens though. You got to start.
Yeah. I'm so sorry, everybody. That's it's going to end here.
It's okay.
They worked hard to earn that title.
I'm just trying to set the pace. That, you know, we're talking about lichens and we're in lichen territory because they are the essentially the offspring of Lucian, which is where lichen as a term comes from.
Ah, you seem very brushed up on the lore.
I'm not.
You're even, ready to.
Is the crazy thing is I'm just was obsessed at a period of time of this lore, and I fell right back into it. I was like, yeah, so I know it's like, well, the whole idea.
And you have seen the other movies already too?
I've seen three. I've seen the trilogy. I've seen all the way up to. So what is it? It's Evolutions next, and then what is the last one called?
I think Rise of the Lycans, and is the prequel, and then the next one. I don't know what it's called, and then there's another one after that. That okay. is the one that's not rated super well.
Then maybe I've only seen two.
There's Evolution, but, then Rise of the Lycans, and then Awakening, who I guess would complete the trilogy. And then there's Blood Wars. That's the most recent one.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, just a testament to the lore you're talking about that it establishes in this first movie generated, you know, a whole franchise out of this lore. And it was fun to experience that again, watching this, where this movie genuinely is a setup for another movie. So the way that they handle first of this is like introducing what you need to in order to understand what's going to happen next. And it kind of keeps it well enough in line of like just giving you the information about the larger world through the plotting of this movie. And it's pretty cool.
That established, and then having actors who want to come to play and that, you know, that are going to be back in the next iteration and iteration after, like, to know Kate Beckinsale's just down and looks like she's having fun, and
you're the lead of a franchise.
And you're so badass and just like legendary.
Stop. Yeah, absolutely.
And not only that, but I mean, just to start with the cast, like Michael Sheen and Bill Nye, like these guys are made to be in a movie like this. Like, oh my God, like they're it's like, it elevates so much. And I feel like some of this would be way more forgettable and just stupid without being fun and entertaining if they have like just not the right cast and not the right
more of play
and that bring like more, weight to it. Yeah. I wanted that just character to be a little bit more, through and then to be more written.
It needed a better actor. So to your point, and I can
understand. I don't want to hate on that guy's humor. He didn't do a terrible job, but you know, I guess.
I mean, he was all looks. No, like so much of his story is about this plot he's doing. He just is always so aloof in every scene. Yeah. So it's nothing interesting. He doesn't bring anything else to the table in it. And it's really grating because he's kind of acts as an audience surrogate to a degree, because he is putting us in the places we need to be in order to understand these connections that are happening. And he just is like so milquetoast where he just looks like, yeah, he definitely looks like a vampire for sure. But something too is like, we potentially we're going to have Danny on this episode, and Craven's outfit for the party is such a Danny outfit where he had this shirt underneath that was like sparkles. It's cool. Like I'm not saying that it wasn't cool, but it's like cool in a particular way where he's got this, like his idea of cool is having this sparkly shirt with the coat over it and having these big dress shoes and stuff. But nonetheless, like Craven as a actor, unfortunately, was a bummer for me this time around, because he just like, amongst what you were saying, I'm sorry, I'm trailing off here a bit, but like this movie having Bill Nye and Michael Sheen in it, really, man, you just see how great they are. Because some of this script and stuff you can, and we will talk about, you're like, and I've seen this movie before, but poorly acted. And to see a movie like this that has good actors in it, really bringing it, it really... it's noticeable, I guess, is what I would get at.
Yeah, and everything you have said, like, kind of works for how my feelings are with Scott Speedman a little bit too. But unfortunately, like, I don't want to be too harsh on them. Where it's like, because I know that I'm not going to be able to T2B get the perfect cast for this movie. Maybe there's a world out there where those guys are a little more interesting to be with, and the chemistry and everything between Kate Beckinsale and the romantic lead and all that, like, just works a little bit better. And with Craven, I think I was bummed out as much with that as with like his story. 'Cause when it came to, I was kind of interested in his kind of, in the nuance of what he was trying to do. I was totally. Like, his coup is almost righteous.
And what he's
trying to do with Lucian and everything is the way forward past Bill Nye's character's name, but it's like, he's trying to unite him. And then for him to, I was really bummed out, like, not to get too far ahead, when he makes that decision to ex-nay poor Lucian, poor Michael Sheen out of the picture. 'Cause it's like, man, I wanted that to be more of a union, and for those guys not to have the disagreement as much, and for them to be on the same page about what they're trying to do, and for him to make that turn, I was like, I don't know, like, and to have a little bit more lead up of how that coup came to be a little bit, that was interesting enough to me that, yeah, maybe you make good points where he could have been somebody have more subtext behind his performance that, because Michael Sheen is smoldering. Like, you can tell like what's going, how much hurt and pain he's been through in his existence throughout millennia or whatever.
Sure. And no, it is, this movie does well, to your point, of these characters that I feel like could be underwritten typically in a movie that is so just like a studio play for like, this is the hot new thing right now, let's make it, and not really putting enough thought into it. And this script actually has like these layers to that guy's character, where then the stoicism and the inability to act in the first act of the movie then actually contributes to this like ideology that we then discover that he has, and then to, on top of it, to come around and turn it and go like, no, but then he really just wants power. You're like, whoa. This is like, this movie's thinking three levels deep on Craven. Wow, what are we doing here?
That's where it starts to go backwards a little bit for me, where it's like, is this everything that I want, or is it an hour and a half pure fun and those screws a little? That's still going to be a criticism regardless. Like, this definitely needs a little bit of those screws tightened a bit, whether you're going to focus more on the fun action, you're the romance or the lore. But just to have a almost 2.5 hour movie of this was surprising to me. I was like, oh, wow, this is built out. But I think it's also a little sloppy and a little like, underwritten, or like a little like things, especially the third act battle just goes on a little bit too long for me. But it for the
100%.
But that's where it kind of succeeds too, because now with that lore presented, I am curious about those sequels. You know, like what's out there? You know, like what's going on with this next hybrid?
So.
I think
this movie is, by the way. Yeah, whenever he checks in, we'll bring him in. But I mean, what you're talking about is, in my mind, the byproduct of this movie being developed by a stuntman.
Right.
And really prioritizing, prioritizing stunts, which are pretty fantastic.
The wire work is impeccable.
Absolutely impeccable. But I agree with you that the way they built out the action sequences make the movie drag a bit.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's a lot of, it ends up being a lot of the same stuff, I think, is really the problem. Is once you first introduce the subway scene to bring it back to the beginning of the movie, which is so Matrixy with the color really correcting is. Of it, yeah. And then the way that the light is flickering and whatnot,
the
and
the
way
that they move and stuff.
So incredibly Matrixy, wet. Which is soaking wet. Just wet.
So wet.
And she's just on top of like the ruins of a church brooding. There's so much brooding. And then she's like narrating, and that's like Carrie Ann Moss and Matrix and like open action scene with a woman in leather and in like this dark city. But yeah, I think I heard hello neighbor.
Hello. Oh, neighbor. Hey,
buddy.
How's it going?
We got him.
That's great. We got him. We threw out a line for Danny, and looks like he took the bait.
Yep.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
We caught ourselves a big fish.
Yeah, real me in.
Albert Finney. You know, he voiced one of the Lycans with that really deep voice.
Oh, let's talk about the Albert Finney's voice guy. Because that was shocking when that happened. When he finally talks, that guy, I was like, whoa! You know,
yeah,
and also what I thought too is that that guy's voice is so low, Trump would hate him because just like microphones, he doesn't like things too low.
Oh my God. Is that right?
You're going to give that one to the Colbert while you're at it, man. I think Jimmy Fallon would like that. You should write for Fallon.
Stop, no.
We get political here.
Take that on the road.
I mean, I already dropped my two. What is this? Why is this a two-party system joke earlier? We're on a roll.
Yeah. We got the Lycans and we got the vampires. It's a two-party system, even in the underworld.
Let's
go.
Like Romeo and Juliet, more like Tamala and Trump.
Okay. All right.
How the hell are you, Danny? Yeah, what's your underworld history? Are you a diehard seen them all, or are you a first time arrival, or are you only seen the first one sort of guy?
I've like poked around in the series a little bit, but like really I remember seeing this
I think you're breaking up a little bit. I don't know if there's a way you can get a better signal.
Let me see if I can fix that.
I can hear you a little better right now. But you're poke around in the series a little bit.
Yeah. Like I definitely saw this one in theaters and everything, but I remember it getting like pretty kind of like cheesy as it went. Like I think I definitely fell off of this series by the time it the third one came out and everything. Because I think it just got kind of too ridiculous. But I mean, I definitely like it. I enjoy the idea of the concept and stuff, but I'm not the biggest Steven fan.
The biggest what? Sorry, you're kind of in and out.
I don't know. For some reason, shit. Let me see. Maybe if I just. I don't want to take it off of the headphones though. Well,
you can fiddle with it for a little bit. I mean, that's funny because it's like I'm not sure at the rate of these movies coming out, but it seems like they were coming out at a pretty good clip. And the reason we're here is that this is a polarizing series. This is not just one movie, but this is a series that the audience is down for throughout, you know, until I guess we get to the last one is where they start to turn according to Rotten Tomatoes a little bit. But it just tells me that the audience doesn't give a fuck and about what the critics say and is down for more of these movies, and they're making them for them. So they're not, yeah, they're not made for the critics. They're made for popcorn entertainment and should be viewed as such, of just having a good time and enjoying the ride.
That's fair.
But it's surprising. We were mentioning a little bit earlier to the amount of lore and depth with some of it, while also some of it being underwritten. There's time for action, there's time for lore, there's time for just actors to chew up all of the dark and wet scenery all around. one of which I had to timestamp it. Bill Nye does not show up in the movie until like 45 minutes in. And there's a lot of buildup to it, but he does not show up until, 45 minutes. And God, this was the time of Bill Nye not even being Bill Nye. You'd have to be either a squid Davy Jones man, you don't even see his face, or covered in, or like looks like he's missing his skin, like in this one. and I feel like that he's already so good of an actor, he could do it without any sort of makeup. But I feel like it's also one of those guys that once he gets whatever green screen suit on or whatever on, it just puts him there even more. But
absolutely.
Yeah. Leading 100%. Up to that. Yeah. You mentioned the subway train or the train scene. Yeah.
Two train sequences in this movie as well.
The first one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's the first one and the second one. It's something that really kind of got stuck in my craw was this idea of like, what city are we in? You know, because there's this idea that is being posited that the vampire stronghold has been in this city. And that stronghold is now being contested by this growing number of lichens.
Transylvania. Which we come to,
okay, maybe. Yeah, you know what? I'm into that. I'm into that idea.
No. I don't know. It's got this big... Was she in a church? It almost looks castle-ish. But then
estates and manors and there's a bunch of stuff. I mean, in this movie, one thing that's true is there's a bunch of stuff in it.
Oh, so much stuff.
But it does have that going for it.
One thing that this movie has going for it is stuff.
What other movies have lots of stuff? Yeah.
Oh,
well, man. A fair amount of movies have stuff in it.
Like Baz Luhrmann movie? Baz Luhrmann movies have lots of stuff.
Lots of stuff in it.
Like, got out of a Baz Luhrmann movie, Moulin Rouge. Wow, Moulin Rouge is great. That was a lot of stuff. Therefore, I like it.
It is just a plethora of shit.
Look at all that stuff on the screen.
But... yeah, the reason too is that like kind of why the cross-sticking happened is that this movie is positing that another coven is coming to do this ceremony to resurrect Marcus because it's his turn to rule and to be alive because the
two asleep, one alive.
Two asleep, one alive, which still ends up being the case. But that coven was so nondescript as well. And I would have really loved
if
there was more of like, this is the UK coven and this is like maybe the New York coven or something like that. Like I wanted a little bit more of that lore, which we just don't get because this movie is more concerned about Scott Speedman becoming a half vampire, half lichen hybrid, which has never been seen before.
Michael Corvin is way more interesting than anything else going on. What I want to know is more about Michael Corvin.
Well, because he comes from the Corvinius family, I think I've already said on this pod.
I like that idea.
You know, and they've been searching for him with this red string, like a serial killer board that they have in the
Pepe Silva.
The medical Silva. Bay, because they're just capturing people and vampires to test their blood to see if that they're a good match with lichen blood. So,
and when I love just, that it's like, and this is like just trial and error. That sounds very arduous.
No, they put both of them together and then they look in the microscope and then they see the cell. I love how they show the cells like mitosis. No mitosis. You know, just like dissipates or whatever. Like, oh, that's no good. You know, that's no good. You want them to, what do you want them to do? You want them to do not that.
But you want it to turn blue
or like
bluish purple
or like him, I guess he turns all dark and
right,
yeah, but I like that the guy, it's like a crazed German scientist that looks like he was once a Nazi vampire at some point in his history.
I love a crazy German scientist too, man.
I know, it's such a James Bond thing.
It's such a, well, and there's a Q scene in this. It's so James Bond where we,
yeah,
thank God, we happen to be, you know, part of the experience of the vampire lore where silver bullets were invented. And we got to see that whole,
that's where it's like, this is so dumb, but so cool at the same time. Like, I
so cool.
Like, their logic of why they would still use guns against each other and have it be and like be able to have those matrix new
technology,
guns,
yeah,
is because these are, they have the silver nitrate bullets and they have the daylight UV bullets.
Yeah.
Not only do they look fucking cool, like they have a purpose, you know, and you get to see the silver come out, or you can see the daylight effect. The vampire, and it's like,
the vampire.
Oh, totally. And then they can have their own style of guns and just, oh my God. And then Kate Beckinsale can, for some reason, can have infinite bullets. It's great.
Yeah. I mean,
the best situation of that is where, and she does this often in the movie, but the most egregious would be her shooting into the ground in a circle to break through the floor of a building.
That blew my mind. That blew my mind.
When
so fucking cool.
When if she has like, that many bullets, can't you just shoot the people coming at you? Like, it seems...
It's
like that would be more of a...
That's your problem with it? Than
just yeah, like, there was like... Well, there was a three guy coming at her, and she's like, you know what I gotta do? I gotta shoot the ground so fucking much that I fall right through it. And like, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, that is like, that is the epitome of like something that is so purposeless but so fucking rad. Like,
totally.
I agree. Like, that was it was a good time.
Totally.
That doesn't make up for it. But as far as all the like vampire lore and stuff, they like decide what they should do and what they shouldn't. Because like at the first part where she goes to visit Marcus's like tomb or fucking Victor's tomb and shit, like she walks up to that glass like to talk to that guy,
room?
And she has a reflection. And I'm like,
they're in?
She walks up to that control booth. And there's like glass right there, and you can see a reflection. And I was like, wait a second, why can we see a reflection? And then I'm like, oh, is it because she's like a half breed daywalker or something? And then later, like one of the other vampires is like looking into the mirror, and I was like, oh no, they just all have reflections. Like, yeah. I mean, there's a certain stuff like that where you're like, that these vampires just don't do that, or whatever.
Sure,
like, it posits yeah. You know, I mean, they can do whatever they want in their vampire world, but yeah,
right. Exactly. It's inconsistent for sure. Which this movie as a whole is uneven in places as well, you know.
Yeah, you can't hold it up to a candle.
That's what we're doing. I mean, but okay, Danny, before you got here, that's a great point though. Before you got here, we were talking about this idea because we're going to start this is the start of a whole series that we're doing about the underworld movies. And
okay.
there is a level of like, love for this. Yeah, I don't know, the ride of it all.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but just like Resident Evil, like where, like by the time you get to the last couple, it's like, okay.
We've that's done absolutely Evil. Another movie born in this time of wanting to be a Matrix style action movie. I feel or it's like definitely stuck in those trappings, and that one is not nailed down in what the story and lore is going to be. And I think what's so fun about this one, it is an original IP, original story that they're doing, all, and they don't have to adhere to any rules, whether it be Mirror or whatever. And it can just make up its own thing and worry any so much more about the stunts and then the style and the action and stuff like shooting a hole in the ground and everything. It just... it made me think of like an anime or something. And I was like, the Wachowskis are very inspired by that kind of stuff as well. And it just, it felt like when the music swells and they have a moment to themselves that you just feel like they're powering up or something. That kind of stuff is so melodramatic and purely for style points. And it's, I don't know, the self-seriousness goes so far over that it becomes somewhat camp, but also like I take it very much at face value as well. When it's Michael Sheen, Bill Nye, and Kate Beckinsale believing in everything they're fucking saying, then it's like I have no problem. Like they know they're cool, they know they're buying into this whole thing, and they're seeing some cuckoo ass dialogue, some batshit lines that some they have to deliver. Like when Michael Sheen first shows up and everything, and he's like, the guy's like turned back into normal.
Well, let's talk about that real quick.
Like, yeah, let's put some pants on. I'm just saying his delivery in that moment is amazing because their lines that he's saying is bananas.
Right, but that whole sequence is such a ripoff of Fight Club. It was so funny. Yeah, totally. The transition of the Matrix-y subway train sequence and then going into running into the Fight Club that they're having amongst the Lycans is so funny because it just really is cribbing off of these things that are so popular at the time and doing it in a way that's very blatant, but it's not like I'm totally mad about it.
No, same. They're not even being shy about it. They're just like, no, we want to be like the Matrix.
I'm not upset. Yeah. I'm seeing things I think are cool in a movie, you know?
Yeah, but the Wachowskis didn't sell out. And, you know, they did three other Matrix movies and everything, but they got very deep and philosophical and everything, which I like those movies for what they are, for sure.
Yeah.
But Underworld, it's like, nah, we just want that style and we just want to have fucking vampires and werewolves fight each other. And it's like, yeah, sign me the hell up.
Well, and also, too, we start to establish this idea that the Lycans are this underground, like, insurgents, these coups that are trying to claw back, if you will, like this vampiric imperialism. I mean, my God.
It's funny that you say Coors. It's funny that you say Coors because that's the silver bullet. Yeah.
Fuck up. Wow. Well, Craven is a cooler too. And if he would just, if he just had an inner circle, then.
I'm sorry, that was really funny.
Is that what Coors stands for too?
It's just Coors is brewed by lycans. Is what we're bossing.
No, it sounds like what baby birds do.
Well, I mean, they can't even touch it. They can't even touch. They'd be all mud wet all the time.
Yeah, that's
right. So, oh my God, if they had a moment where
drinking Coors in
vampires drink blood. Pass me a beer. Not that one. No,
they totally drink Stella Artois, don't they? Those fucking snobby-ass vampires in this movie.
Can I say something about, like, no, they, I love they enjoy every nice time. Every time Kate Beckinsale comes back into that mansion, and like every time, all the other vampires are doing the exact same thing. every time. They're all just sitting around smoking and drinking and like being like fancy pants little bitches. And like, it's like they all do nothing besides like sit in the same chairs all day long, drinking and smoking and looking so all stuck up.
Much brooding in this movie by, and when everyone, yeah, whenever they return, they're just in a different outfit, all drinking their red blood. And I like how all the blood looks like different styles or different types, you know, and that's how that's what different types of blood look like. I was going to ask you guys which one would you rather yeah, exactly. Which would you rather hang out in? But I mean, you want to be in that mansion hanging out in nice clothes, smoking and drinking.
The light can seem pretty cool.
Yeah, but you're, I mean, maybe they just need to better digs, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to find a better place. That's what they're trying to do. Yeah, but for now they're just in the sewers. That's not fun.
Yeah,
I'd rather be in the mansion.
Smelled pretty bad. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I probably stunk in like the lichen sewers. It probably smelled like dog too. Right.
Where are the lady lichens? Jesus. Where are my lady lichens at?
Yeah, hey,
that's a great question.
I didn't see any lady lichens. Is that why Lucian fell in love with the vampire? He's like, I don't want to sexually reproduce anymore.
Okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that, because this movie is positing this uprising that the Lycans are the progenitors of. They are the ones that are sick and tired of this empirical vampire rule. And this stems from the very first Lycan, Lucian, which is why they're called that, is leading that charge. And he comes off as the villain in the beginning, but I mean, this movie takes a turn in the middle of it, does it not?
I love how we get into Lucian's backstory. I don't love the little every now and then flashback, how they kind of pepper that in throughout the movie. I didn't care for how they did that. I'm not sure what the best way would be, like show that right at the beginning and then have him be a Lycan in his Lycan form, so you don't see his, I know they're trying not to show his face, I get that, but that reveal is so stretched out that I kind of, and I didn't like how they made the flashbacks all like shaky and everything, but I like where the narrative leads us in terms of having these two factions and then getting into both of them and then having this reveal of what happened so far in the past. And that's like something I like about like Game of Thrones or something, you know, or like Lord of the Rings, what are these big kind of lore thing where it's just like you are entering into the narrative at a particular time, but this war has been going on for fucking ages. So obviously some big shit has happened and we're
here.
We're here for a reason. And to have the vampires not be fully trustworthy and then have the Lycans have such a sympathetic sort of turn at the end of why they are the way they are. That was a winning thing for me. And through Michael Sheen, it was the most successful, and it was bullshit that they killed him off. I hated that.
Yeah. Danny, what do you think about the lore?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. Like I think they did a good job of like you guys said, I think they did do like a decent job with kind of creating their own mythos and stuff. I thought that you were getting something new with how the whole like human hybrid like kind of thing comes about. You have this bloodline of Scott Speedman's people. Like I like that. Like it was like, oh, there was one survivor of like a plague village and all of that. And that's how, you know, we were able to discern that this was like a carrier. And like that was kind of an interesting storyline. Through like pseudo, like, you know, bullshitty, like science scenes mixed with, you know, the flashbacks and stuff that we got, it was, it was loosely done, but good enough for us to be like, yeah, I'll buy that. Let's go.
Let's get back
to shoot 'em up stuff.
But no, I mean, yeah. Again, James has already said this, and I totally agree. Is there are goofy on paper lore that is delivered so well by competent actors that make a huge difference in whether this movie is cool or not, realistically, because this could be so stupid and silly.
Yeah.
And we could be, this movie could easily be a movie that us as movie fans on that's talking here and present here is like, we like stupid movies, but there's something a little bit more to this that like it finds a good balance between pretty silly stuff, but positing it really, really well by competent actors that makes it like intriguing that there's this whole, you know, three legendary vampires and this conflict that's been happening for centuries with the Lycans and whatnot that, you're like invested in. I was pulling up my notes. So one thing that was just brought up is the flashbacks. There was one though, not a flashback, but it is a cut to like somebody doing something potentially just like recently in the past, but nonetheless, like this is a conversation being had by Scott Speedman and Kate Beckinsale. And while they're having the conversation in the middle of it, they cut to Michael Sheen doing stuff. And it really blew me away. This like conversation scene essentially being broken up by a POV of another conversation happening that's moving the plot along that made the overall like part of the plot and part of the movie like kind of rat-a-tat-tat, kind of keeping that pace. And this movie has pretty well paced. I know that we could talk about the action scenes being longer more if we wanted to, especially the last sequence as we get close to wrapping up, but like this movie cranks in my mind.
The broad, like the swaths of where things are going are great. Like from chunk to chunk to chunk, like it all makes sense in my mind of like that. Yeah. It works. Just, tightening up the screws a little bit and finding a way to make those a little less chunky, I'd say. But I think I like how Kate Beckinsale's character as well takes initiative in such a cool way, and she doesn't take shit, and it's not like super performative in sort of like, I don't know, she just is badass, and it's not any sort of, she doesn't need to prove it or anything. She's doing what she wants. She's just fucking chilling on her laptop and in the library on her, you know, in her leather. I love that she lets her lounge wear. And the guy's giving her shit. And then she goes and just revives Bill Nye just like on her own. And all of her research into Scott Speedman is kind of like she's investigating. There's a kind of somewhat of a mystery and she's interrogating him and everything and just making moves without over implicating to the audience about what she's doing and why she just does it. And you kind of have to play catch up a little bit. There's a little bit of spoon feeding with like those cutaways of like, remember this, remember that. Yeah. Well, that relates to this right now. It's not super necessary, but she does so much heavy lifting when it is those scenes with Scott Speedman, that like, it's kind of amazing how well she's able to do everything, top to bottom. And then,
totally.
Yeah.
That's a well said period. Yeah, absolutely. Kate Beckinsale fucking rocks in this movie. And she carries so much of this, like we've talked about, this weird dialogue about vampires and all of these echelons of like different types of vampires and the connection that they have with this history to the Lycans and introducing that concept. Like, she nails it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like whatever stunts there is, I see her like that's actually her. I feel like a lot of times she's given all the wire work.
Yeah.
And
yeah, the stunts are great in this.
They are. They're cool. They're a little, and to the like fun of it or the amusement park ride of it all is like they are very extra or very
stunt like spectacular. Overdone.
Yeah, very stunt spectacular, but that's not a bad thing necessarily, right? You know, it's
no.
This movie to me shows you, like, if you earn like the audience's cachet by taking something serious and really like living in that world, you are then allotted like more
leniency
on things that are overblown or spectacular, like too much, you know? And yeah, I think this movie fucking nails that.
Straight up. Like okay, so then there's the Scott Speedman of it all, which is like the center of this movie that it's like just circling around. And I feel like that gradual bleeding of information about who and why he's so important, I think that's where it gets a little repetitive to me. Sure. In terms of the narrative, because there's this period of time in the movie where he's just getting fucking tossed around. He gets bit by the lichen, and then he gets dropped off of the vampires and like, we don't fucking want you. And then he goes back to lichens, back to the vamp. And then like the fake cops are after him. And like, it's just a lot of chasing after Scott Speedman without really fully knowing why. Reveal it like as it's like this big thing. I was like, yeah, no, I pretty much got it. Yeah. And I thought that was like just the only like kind of repetitive thing. When it got to like the cops with him in the car and the back and everything, like taking him back from Kate Beckinsale when he's like handcuffed and stuff. And I was like, didn't you guys just have him and bite him and then give him to the vampires? Now you got to take him back. Like, there's so much of, we need Scott Speedman.
Sure. This movie fascinates me
in a MacGuffin sort of
in the Scott Speedman of it all, because that seems like such a studio direction. Is you have to have a heart and soul in this vampire movie. You need something that's very classic movies. This will they, won't they relationship that then carries on throughout this entire trilogy. And yeah, again, it's the Scott Speedman of it all, where he is, in my mind, is more cast because of looks than because of acting quality. And yeah. So that's why this movie has this unevenness where you have like really amazing actors like Kate Beckinsale, Michael Sheen, Bill Nye. And then you have Scott Speedman with like me and James, I feel like have watched movies because we watch movies all the time. That's why we do what we do. And like a ton of movies we've seen is like that character in the story is played by a looks guy and is kind a little bit underwritten because of the capability of that actor. And it is somewhat distracting in these movies where you're like, I need you to have more emotion in this. And you're really just providing more of like mood setting and look of it rather than
like hair. Yeah.
Yeah, than actually providing something interesting about your plight in life, which is very harrowing in this movie because he's transforming into a whole different beast and then getting involved in all of this vampire lichen struggle. And he just acts like, okay, the thing that drives me nuts about him is he is the epitome of like the grunge era.
Yeah.
He looks almost like Eddie Vedder. Like, it really is so clearly in my mind, like a studio thing of 2003. They still aren't with the times yet. They still think that an Eddie Vedder type is what the audiences want. Like, and then you just get, and then you get Scott Speedman, which is like, it's not, again, he's not bad, but he just doesn't bring anything else. It's just so serviceable. And when you have people like Bill Nye in this movie, which I had to make a note of, is in this movie, he's almost like working on the what ends up becoming the Davy Jones, like clicking of his mouth.
He's doing some of that for sure.
Yeah.
He's doing mouth work in this, and I loved it. Enough of it.
I'm weird like, pauses.
Be weird. You're a vampire. Right. Like, and he nails it.
So fucking good.
It makes it's just such great casting. To cast Bill Nye as that vampire is inspired to me.
And inspired Davy Jones, I'm sure, in a way too, that he could do something like that. And I mean, to to touch on the Scott Speedman a little bit more is like the parallel would be probably Keanu and Matrix, since that's been such a big comparison of like of someone in that role. Sure. But another one that I'm thinking of is James McAvoy in Wanted. And what sure. James McAvoy does in that movie is he's brought into a world of assassins that he doesn't understand. And Angelina Jolie is kind of like the Carrie Ann Moss or the Kate Beckinsale to him in that movie. And his reaction to Angelina Jolie, like putting him through the ringer of what he's to expect in this world. The whole time in that movie, I remember him just being like, "Wow, this is crazy. What do you mean there's assassin? No way." Like he is like losing his mind. He cannot believe like what's happening. And that
because that's a normal reaction,
right? Then that's a
normal reaction.
And that's my point with Scott Speedman is like, he has only like one or two of those moments where he's just like, he's like at one point, he's like, "I've been bit by a fucking human. Like, what do you mean?" Like when he's talking to his buddy at the hospital or whatever, right. But there needed to be a lot more like, what the fuck is going on? And what is happening to me? There was not enough urgency and not enough fear, not enough spectrum of those emotions. Not to harp so hard on poor Scott Speedman, because I'm sure he did.
Go for it.
He did,
go for it.
He did what the director told him to do in a lot of ways. and he was put in this position for whatever reason. But when Michael Corvin. But when you put him next to these other actors, and it just kind of highlights it a little bit more.
The difference is too great between other players in this movie, you know.
And the other thing, like, I didn't for some reason didn't clock it of like when I didn't do too much research, but I was just like googling Underworld and all that stuff on Wiki, and then it was like, oh, based on a story, Romeo and Juliet, and I was like, oh
yeah,
duh, like of course. But then of course, like, that's more of Michael Sheen's story, is the Romeo and Juliet of it all. But
it's like,
if they were to add a little bit more of that Romeo and Juliet into this, is another way they could have gone. It's already almost 2.5 hour movie. So maybe there's not enough room for romance, and maybe that's more an evolution or something, but their scenes together, like, had no real chemistry. That was left to be desired, unfortunately. But I know they're going through a lot in this movie. So even when that kiss happened, I was like, "What? Oh, of course you're handcuffing. Okay, that makes more sense." Well,
right, and the kiss happens because of Kate Beckinsale. Like, she is the initiator of it, you know, because she is not only kissing him, but she is tying him down because she understands that he's going to become a Lycan. And there's so much more work being done by her, while Scott Speedman, on the other hand, just seems like, okay, I guess I'm going to just say my lines and be here. And you're like, at a bare minimum, I think all of us can agree he said his lines and hopefully he showed up to work on time. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
Dude, I bet he's maybe he's not. I know nothing about it. I could totally see that. Him just being a consummate professional. Yeah. It did exactly what the director said. And nothing more, you know, you bring someone else, like, we're just going to, this whole podcast is going to be Michael Sheen, Bill Nye,
it's going to be, we're starting it. Actually, the name of the series is Scott Speedman Could Have Done More.
I wonder how he takes on that hybrid role in evolution. I guess we'll find out. I'm not sure how I feel about what do you guys think about how the hybrid looks now that we're kind of getting into.
I think it was
what else we're missing in this movie.
Yeah, I think it was smart to do a pretty minimal, like, it's an in between transformation. I think that they nailed pretty well. Like, it's just essentially his rib cage, like his chest is larger,
that looked kind of weird,
and then his skin turns a gray color. But I overall, I think they were smart to choose something that didn't require a lot, because I think we could probably already tell that Scott Speedman adding more to his plate might not have been a better move. So I think the movie did well to make sure that Scott Speedman was as comfortable as he could be, so that he could just deliver his lines and show up to work.
I feel like there's some element of him being able to do some of those stunts. They're like, oh, he's in shape and he can move around pretty well. Totally. You know, we can put the makeup on him and he'll look good. Would you think of the lichens? How do you think how the lichens looks, Danny?
I liked them. Honestly, I did think, although there was a few different like attacks that the lichens did that it looks like really, really like kind of like cheesy kind of like I can't remember what it was, but it was like one of the times that they're attacking people and like breaking through glass and like just they just do like a quick shot of a claw and like some teeth on somebody, but you can't quite tell anything. Mm-hmm. And like I wanted in the beginning to see a little less like I always gravitate less towards the CG and more towards the practical effects, but then when there was actual practical effects with like the lichens, it was like the practical effects look. Oh shit, dude!
I know.
Here, is that better?
Yeah, I think. I think I got what you were saying. It was just like that's a hard one too, because the CG looked, I think, even worse.
Worse.
But I know what you mean. I usually want practical effects, and I still think I do. I understand that there needed to be some combination of the two. I totally understand that. And this is what they wanted storyboarded out of what it should look like. And they just made it happen with whatever CG that they could. But just to think that at this point in time, there was still a guy in a werewolf costume and a big dumb rubber mask, and they had to just act opposite each other. And there's a moment in the movie where a guy pulls out two whips that are made of silver, and then there's just a big guy in a werewolf costume, and I'm like, peak cinema! like, this is it, man! This is what it's all about! And it's just like, rah! And he's like, and the guy's like, rah, 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 rah. Like, yeah! Yeah! This is awesome! So cool. I love those. That whip thing.
Vampire's whipping that light. Oh, man.
I fucking love that whip guy, man. That was so, that reminded me like Soul Calibur.
And then his whip got stuck. Oh, and then he got eat. Oh,
isn't dual wielding is a thing of this time? I feel like it dual is. Wielding is like
very much so
on a lot of shit right now.
A lot of two guns. Yeah.
Uh huh. Kate Beckinsale obviously was doing a lot of that, and I don't know. I think of like Legolas and his knives. Dual wielding is
cool. Yeah, there was so many times though where like she would put like she's a terrible shot in this movie. Like, every time she fires at people, like she misses so much that it's like you kind of lose faith in her. when she's at the shooting range though, shooting all those busts of different.
I would love to shoot into marble busts of like, I don't know, what was that? William Shakespeare or something?
A famed lichen, let's shoot his head.
Just shooting the silver bullets. Oh, and then there's a queue that exists in the world, and also too, the wardrobe is so funny to me, because you like, as a wardrobeist, you, not me, but I'm just thinking like them for this, is like, it must be difficult to find a balance between like, okay, vampires have been around for a while, so they have this old aesthetic to their clothing, but then we need to update it and we need to make it, you know,
BDSM.
Yeah, BDSM like, and striking that balance is so funny.
And I feel like they put it all into Kate Beckinsale, because other vampires' outfits look bad, but it's just like they all look good, and everyone looks like they're models hanging out at like I don't know what kind of is this a Balenciaga shoe? and her friend and everything. I like how her friend like is faithful to her as well. Like helps her out.
I love that stuff.
And
me too.
Both her and her friend like have the most like symmetrical faces I've ever seen in my life, or they're just, yeah, they look like that. Everyone in Vampire Land looks like just models. But Kate Beckinsale's attire, man, it's just, it is so cool. And like the way that they fit in like this corset sort of thing, and how she never has lounge wears. I don't know why I'm clocking that more, because I just like to be cozy. But I'm just like, throughout the whole movie, there's never a point where Kate Beckinsale can like have a moment to chill. And when she does, I'm telling you, she's just in the library sitting very straight up on her laptop. And I'm like, get this girl some leather PJs or something. I don't know.
Leather PJs.
I mean, what does she wear when she goes to sleep? I don't know. Or any of these vampires, they just like, they all hang out at the mansion in just the finest wear all the time.
Absolutely. Do vampires sleep though, you know?
Yeah, maybe
not. I mean,
I like to think they all like hang out upside down, you know, on top of on the ceiling.
I did really like the whole like sarcophagus room. Like I loved how that shit was rad. And like how it like it pops up from the ground, and then she like turns it and everything. And then it has so the whole rad. Like little blood luge, like
blood connected to his back, and it's
that was so cool. That was really dope. Fucking cool.
So sick.
And then watching him pop all the tubes out, and then that was great. I mean, his slow transition to being like flesh, not a dried up like raisin was fucking great.
I love that. The vampire jerky is what I call it.
I like how it showed when the blood was going into his body, it showed that there was like spider webs and stuff.
I didn't love that, and that was one of my notes. I was like, the inside body CG in this movie blows. It's so shitty looking. And to your point, how funny is that? That the CG inside of his body has cobwebs in it.
So funny. Oh, yeah,
it's so stupid.
It's like,
he's a vampire, so he's got cobwebs in his body.
That reminded me kind of like the opening of Fight Club 2, where it's just kind of like that whole opening where it's going through all of the body. It's the body. I forget. Like it's just going like there's points in Fight Club where it does like into the inner workings of something, like when the fridge or whatever shows them like, oh, it'll light up a fire, that'll explode or whatever. It's cool. It's funny to see like trademarks of CG at a certain time, and
trademarks of movies in general at this time. I mean, to bring it back full circle to where we started, is like this movie wears its influences on its shoulder wholeheartedly. Like, yeah, there's just clear ripping off of what this movie thinks is cool. And
it's also very of the time in its own way, of things that haven't stuck around, you know. And like, yeah, those trademarks of the time. But I was thinking of the soundtrack and these certain moments, not just shooting the hole in the ground. But you guys remember when Michael Sheen, he's all shot up from her, but then he has to have his moment to push the bullets out of his skin.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden this song starts. It's like, gotta put a bullet out of me.
And he's like
looking up, and he's like pushing it all out. And it just, like that kind of stuff is like Evanescence, Hot Topic sort of shit that hits me in a way that's not going to hit someone totally the same way if they see that movie for the first time without living through it.
You got some hungry kitties over there.
I know.
Yeah.
Kara's going to be back any moment, Luna, I promise. She said she was going to feed you when she gets back. She's going to be back moment.
Let's get to the notes.
I was just going to, my final thing about, just the final action scene I thought was, like I said, a little long. And just when they were like, have those gunfights, I thought they looked so, that's where it looked, the stunts were not good sometimes, because you just see two people with automatic weapons, like big rifles that could shoot a yak from 300 yards away. they would be like 20 feet from each other and just they'd be moving at each other and pew, 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 pew. And then some of them would kind of roll over. And that happened like 5 times at the end. I'm like, we don't need these shots. Like, just get those little like pops of moments in it. That kind of
violence,
that drag. Yeah. And then, yeah, Bill Nye's death was rad, you know, like
so fucking rad.
Like him sitting there, like the whole process of him being confident. I got this. Wait a minute. Something's wrong. And then it'll go to Kate Beckinsale and her blade is bloody. He's like, oh, something's definitely wrong.
He turned around with a severed head. That's not what you would do. Like, that's not how things happen. Like, you can't just get your head cut in half and then turn around, have a moment. That's not how that works.
And if it does happen, it's got to be directly horizontal so it can gravity can at least hold it flat on your lower half. If it's diagonal, it's going to slide off immediately.
Yeah, that's just how that works.
It reminded me like Final Destination kind of shit. That's live.
I'm live.
One of my notes was when Scott Speedman's starts transforming into a werewolf in the back of the cop's car. What do the cops do first thing? They turn on the radio.
The radio?
They're like, this sucks. He starts like, he's like, he's transforming. Let's turn on some tins. And like,
this guy is shit. What a drag.
Look at this photograph. Never made it as a werewolf.
Elf. werewolf in London. What? Oh, man. That would be so cool.
Oh, yeah. What a missed opportunity.
Werewolf in London.
But then it would place it. It placed the location, which you can't have that. This town exists nowhere, not London.
Yeah. Okay, you know. Hair was perfect, though.
These werewolves aren't in London. Who knows where these werewolves are?
Yeah.
They could be London.
Really it could be somewhere. Continuity of this movie.
God forbid. It's so sound. One awake, two asleep. When was there vampire sex? I think there was the Craven and the lady is her friend.
Oh yeah.
And I just wrote there must be so many hickeys after vampire sex because they're just nomming on each other.
Right, I'm like, God, they would just look terrible. Their neck would be fucking.
When he says he's gonna fill her in on a few things.
Oh yeah.
he's like, come to my room so I can fill you in on some things. The next thing that it's like, I'm just banging.
Yeah. And then I'm like, I wrote down. I was like, do you have to take your top off to get your neck sucked?
Yeah.
And like, if you have vampire blood, is that? I don't know.
Right.
What is that like? I was
thinking that too. Yeah.
Is that?
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
Fine.
I thought that. This movie might not make sense.
I'm going to guess.
Okay. I'm not a big car guy, but I thought that white Maserati looked pretty clean. That was looking pretty cool.
Yeah.
Not a car guy, but that Maserati looked clean.
It looks pretty sweet. I like that Maserati. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, he's like, I don't
know. Put down, gearhead.
All right, I'm going to get off this pod and go watch Top Gear.
Yeah. I'm going to search white Maserati. That should bring it up. I'm not a big gearhead. It's so clean. All right.
It's so clean.
I'm not a big car guy, and I'm doing my best, and you're okay, Brandon. What should I get? What kind of Maserati is that? Okay, Brandon.
Stop it.
Okay.
No.
I think that's it.
This is our gears and grease segment.
Gearing up to grease down.
Okay, well, I am going to move on to the next section of the podcast.
Nice.
Take a break at
take a break.
If you want right now, or should we power through?
Take a quick break and then power through. Does that sound okay?
That sounds okay.
Okay, be right back. Welcome back. Let's get to some reviews of Underworld 2003. It was a 31% by critics, a 79% by audiences. Let's check out some little blurbs by critics. One Peter Travers from Rolling Stone gave it a 1 out of 4. And he said, "Your incompetence is most taxing," says the chief vampire, Bill Nye. A line that pretty much nails the rusty blade. Calling it a lesser blade, deep. A lesser Wesley Snipes blade.
Yeah.
Owen Gleiberman, Entertainment Weekly. The sort of movie in which the head vampire telegraphs his evil by using a cell phone and dressing like Kink's Ray Davies in the early 80s.
Wow, that kind of rhymed.
Didn't it? Yeah, Davies in the 80s. Scott Von Doviak, Fort Worth Star Telegram. Let's check it out. Dark Shadow. He says it's Dark Shadows for the PlayStation 2 generation. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Wow. I see how it is. Claudia Puig gave it a 1 out of 4. Features some of the year's most laughable dialogue, is what she says. Jonathan Foreman, New York Post. Sometimes talent and good looks just aren't enough. Beckinsale lacks the movie star presence needed to give life a supernatural hero in a B-genre film.
Not true.
Liam Lacey, Globe and Mail. It's hard to recall a more sexless vampire flick. 2 out of 4.
Oh, she wanted more horn.
Yeah, she wanted more vampire shit.
Oh, well, yeah, just wait a look few more years for Twilight. I'm telling you, it'll be great.
I'm telling you.
Roger Ebert said, this movie is so paltry in its characters and shallow in its story that the war seems to exist primarily to provide graphic visuals. 2 out of 4. Oh. His full review is pretty good, but I won't go more into that. Anita Gates, New York Times, achieves only loudness, aggressive confusion, and one of the silliest head splittings in film history. 2 out of 5. Manola Dargis, LA Times. Alas, as is often the case with lower end genre movies, the story cooked up by Wiseman and his friends, actor Kevin Gravot and film screenwriter Danny McBride, is decidedly less important than the look of the film and its influences. 2 out of 5. And that's our little tasting of the critics. They're just too good for this movie, I guess. Let's hear from the people. 5 stars on Letterboxd. Zoe says, "Everybody say it with me." And there's little claps here, so I'll try to get the claps where she has them in the emoji. Lucian deserved better. Lucian deserved better.
Love that.
Isabel, 5 stars. "This makes me want to buy a leather trench coat and do parkour."
It's good for you.
Alleybug, 5 stars. "If you give me a gothic film with sexy werewolves and vampires, Kate Beckinsale wearing latex, and a soundtrack with Skinny Puppy in a perfect circle, do you really expect me not to fall in love with it?"
Stop it. Stop.
Eliza, 5 stars. "Basically mid-tier, maybe worse, vulgar auteurism, but my brother was very into this and The Matrix and Christian Neumetal like Skillet and POD. When I was like five, so the goofy, edgy, early 2000s goth aesthetics of this call out to a very formative moment in my life like a Proustian Madeline, and therefore it gets 5 stars. Special fangs, get it? Because I'm gothic? To my brother. Yeah, I may like this shitty vampire movie largely because of him, but he also taught me how to be really fucking good at Dance Dance Revolution and let me steal his PS2 games. So it all shakes out in the end."
Yep.
less about this movie and more about
Dance Dance Revolution. I know. I love how PS2 is just mentioned. It just brings me back. Noah, 5 stars. "Hot people in leather and latex who are out in the constant rain is what I'm looking for in a partner." And finally, by Tony, 5 stars. "Freaking phenomenal and utterly amazing. This is like a huge favorite of mine. I just love the world in this movie with the vampires and lichens. God dang, Kate Beckinsale is just kick ass as Celine. Such a great character. I love the vision Len Wiseman brings to this movie. Len, I miss you. Please come back to direct. He'll be directing a John Wick spinoff, Ballerina. I need his direction back, man. I highly recommend this movie. It's incredible. I also just love the sequel. I wish this movie was talked about more."
Fuck yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's this one, another one I found on
Amazon.
I'll read this one. From Jay Munyon, titled, "This movie qualifies for a 20-star rating. Seriously, this is a Danny Malignant situation.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
They go on to say, all other vampire werewolf movies before or since this release wish they were worthy of being in the series. In business speak, there are benchmark ideals, the elite best of the best that set the standard for everything else in this category to measure up to or be measured by. Underworld sets the bar for all vampire and werewolf movies. Kate Beckinsale demonstrates how female leads are supposed to take charge in this 2003 release, Underworld. And just FYI, she continues this great performance throughout the Underworld sequels, Underworld Evolution and Underworld Rise of the Lycans. I don't think she's in that, but okay. All three are the very best there is in this genre. I can't believe you haven't ordered your own DVD yet.
No!
Buy all three in this series right now. You'll thank me. You'd have to not know anything about vampires or werewolves not to love this film. Or be under 20 years old, so you want somebody more your age in headliner roles, so you watch the TV series, softer, milder, less scary stuff. Poo on that. Get the real stuff. This series has all the terror, all the gore, all the legend, and all the antiquity with Kate Beckinsale. I almost bought two copies in case one gets damaged. I hate to go too long between opportunities to watch one of the Underworld series films. Oh, yes. Definitely 5 stars.
Oh,
I love the love.
That guy gets like points on distribution of that movie or something. Yeah. Oh, I said something tells me that guy gets.
Go buy it.
There was a call to action
for DVD sales.
It's my favorite in an audience review.
Use my affiliate link.
Code word Lycan.
Weird, like.
I love the love. It's fun to end on that those kind of reviews because it's almost kind of contagious, the love coming from them, and it's just more fun to love movies in general. It's there's sometimes where it's impossible and you can't do it even how hard you try, and I think we always try to love whatever we see and it doesn't always work out that way. But that being said, Danny, what would any final thoughts and a score you'd give old Underworld?
Yeah, I'd say like you guys made a lot of the points that you guys were making about our breath got speed in there. We're right on. Like I thought that like he definitely harkened like an Eddie Vedder type, and like I wish that whether we got a better performance or even just a different person, I think that this movie could have stood to have that a little bit more, as well as like I did think that there was some things that were lacking, but as far as like it being, like you said, a popcorn movie, the stunts were good. The delivery by the actors that we aforementioned definitely carries this thing in a big bad way home. The stunts were great.
I'm breaking up a bit.
Stunts were great. Stunts were great. We missed after stunts were great.
Stunts were great.
Oh, the stunts were great. I don't know if we mentioned like there was some movies that they were biting off of.
But
I don't know if we mentioned that it felt definitely like kind of a Blade. There was Blade-esque qualities too. To Brandon's statement of just because that was there does not mean that it wasn't fun to do.
Yeah.
And fun to watch. But overall, like, you know, I was entertained, and like I had a good time with it. So I mean, I'm gonna give it like a 70, just above bad, or just above like like okay, because I mean like it was fun throughout, but yeah, I think a 70 is right where I want to land.
Nice.
Right on. Brandini?
James? Nope, you go first.
Okay, I'll go after Lady Annie. I had fun watching this movie. The performances for sure elevated, as Danny said, those Kate Beckinsale helming the thing went a really long way. And Bill Nye and Michael Sheen being who they are and really coming to play and having fun with it and being willing to add some character and some personality and some color to an otherwise pretty stark film brought this movie to another level for them in particular, because I'm not sure with all the other factors if I would have enjoyed it as much. But the other things I did enjoy were the action for sure. And the lore surprised me how much I got invested in it, particularly Lucien's whole backstory and everything, because I was somewhat familiar with it, having seen Rise of the Lycans. and I liked how it surprised me, and I was worried that I was really going to be more on the just this is stupid side, not like this is stupid awesome, like this is fun action and it is done in a way that's not too self-serious. If anything, it's so self-serious that I buy into it as well. And yeah, and some other performances that weren't great, but you know, were serviceable enough, I guess, with Craven and Scott Speedman. The Matrix aesthetic and everything like brings me back, and I think it's totally fine that it was borrowing so much from it, because it had a clear idea in mind of what it wanted to do. But just tighten up those screws a little bit on some of the scenes, namely like the last 20 minutes or so in that sewer fight, I thought were extenuated a little too long. And I think you would have something that would even be higher for me. But for today, it will be, yeah, right there with Danny. I'll do a 72. I think it's a super solid, fun popcorn movie about vampires and lycans and werewolves fighting each other, man. Like, if you know that going into it, like, and if you, yeah, you're like, oh, that doesn't sound good to me, then yeah, go watch something else. But like, if that intrigues you enough, like, You get what you paid for. You get vampires and werewolves finding each other, baby. And then like this whole backstory about why they're doing it, which I don't know. I thought it paid off pretty well. And then a hybrid thing that was like a kicking the stone forward of the mythology of vampires, werewolves, of like, I don't know. That's what Alien Predator did right at the end too. Except you don't get really see that Alien Predator. I don't know. I didn't really see Requiem, but 72. Fun time. Excited for Evolution. I'm excited to see where the lore takes us next.
Nice. Yeah, so I don't know. It's probably unsurprising given the way that I've commented on this movie already, but I think this movie could have been really silly and stupid, and it ends up actually being pretty interesting. And I want to give credit where credit is due, that I think the world building in this first movie nails a lot of what needs to happen in order for you to be interested in what is going to happen in the second movie, as opposed to just being lackluster or not thought out or, yeah, just undercooked. And there are some very overcooked things in this, and I would much rather a well-done pizza than a raw pizza. So yeah, I think this movie is great for what it is. Like, honestly, to finish my review similarly to James's, is like, if you know you're going into this movie with the understanding that this is a movie about vampires versus werewolves, like, it gives you exactly that, and then it excites you in new lore that it created for those characters. So yeah, I think this movie does well for what it's trying to do, and I'm going to give this movie an 82%.
Wow,
coming nice. From the Brandini man.
Hell yeah. I'm curious to see when it shakes out when we do these next couple movies. I reserve the right to re-review this one. I'm going to go ahead and say it now. Whoa. Because maybe as I go through the series, new things will come to light as well, but we'll see what happens. I'm happy with that score. I'm happy that we're all fresh boys on Underworld, and As I've said before,
Fresh Boys.
Fresh Boys.
we're Fresh Boys today. Watch out. Watch out, we're Fresh Boys. So we're moving on now. Underworld Evolution 2006 came out 3 years later. Went to a 17% for the critics. They hate it even more than the 31% for the first one. And then from a 79% for the first one in the audience to a 72% from the audience for Underworld Evolution. The little synopsis here. Seductive vampire Celine, Kate Beckinsale, and renegade werewolf Michael Scott Speedman love one another, but find themselves abhorred by the members of their own clans. Seeking clues that might provide a key to healing the rift between their species, they are hounded by Marcus, Tony Coran, an ancient creature obsessed with perpetuating the war between them. Continually beset by enemies from both sides, the lovers explore their pasts as they seek their destiny. We hope you enjoy this app. We hope you join us on the continuation of the Underworld series. Danny, thank you so much for stopping by. So much, appreciate it all the time, every time.
Yes.
Creator of the Polarized Kingdom, Polar Daddy, is presiding.
You guys, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, pleasure, man.
Always,
thank you, dude, for coming on.
Yeah, man. We appreciate your time and energy put into all of our past episodes as well, and always always a fun conversation to be had, whether we're recording it or not. So I'm glad we got this one on wax. And if you guys care to watch us live, we're on twitch.tv/polarizedpod when we do record. Send us, or rate, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you are listening.
Do that.
That would be super awesome. Polarizethepod@gmail.com. If you want to send us a line, polarizethepod@gmail.com. We love you all, and we'll see you next time. Bye bye.